Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Time for the hard truth. Time for some actual straight fire about Thursday Night Football. Thursday Night Football is not good. In fact, Thursday Night Football is bad. Really bad. Consistently bad. Saying something sucks is not a take, you know this. But Thursday Night Football sucks. Thursday Night Football is a trap. Not a trap game for the players. A full-blown trap door for everybody involved. Like last week's game, Tampa Bay, Carolina. That was rough. Truly rough. But then you get to Friday, right? And I bet you're a lot like me. You have a terrible game on Thursday night, but you wake up on Friday, you start to recover. You've got college games on Saturday. You've got a full slate of the NFL on Sunday. Then you've got a Monday night game. And then what happens? There is no Tuesday game. There is no Wednesday game. By the time Thursday rolls around, you've gone so long without football, you actually convince yourself that Thursday night football is a good thing. By then, you're jonesing so hard, you've already forgotten about the tragedy that happened the week before. You haven't had any actual football in a few days. Some of you haven't actually gotten down in a few days. So you're gearing up for the weekend, and you conveniently forget how crappy Thursday nights are. And you convince yourself, not only is it not one of the worst things ever, it's actually one of the best. Like, hell yeah, free football. Bring it. Freaking Christmas in September. I can't believe how lucky I am. I've got bonus football Thursday night. Let's get it. Oh, and by the way, it's a pretty nice matchup, right? Tennessee, Jacksonville, the Titans, they're actually good. They knocked America's team the hell out in the opener. The Jags have a lot of drama surrounding them. This is going to be a good game. This is going to be a blast. And then like that, you're hooked all over again. You've already forgotten how much you hate Thursday nights. You have forgotten completely how crappy Thursday night football is. You're locked, you're loaded, you're ready. You've forgotten until they kick. And then you're locked, all right. You're locked into a game that is totally unwatchable. Virtually everything about that game is brutal. And is it just me or does it rain every Thursday night? And only where they play that game. Nowhere else in the country, but only where they play the Thursday night game. The conditions are always a mess. The game is always even worse than the elements. And that's what happened last night. Thursday night football is so bad, even Gardner Minshew could not save it. Hey, don't get me wrong. He tried his ass off. Beowulf just needs to show up at the stadium, and then magic is going to happen.
Under center is Minshew. Play fake. Looking. Goes toward the end zone. There's James O'Shaughnessy. Touchdown! A 7-yard touchdown pass from Minshew to O'Shaughnessy, and Jacksonville strikes first on a Thursday night.
Jacksonville Radio Network. All right, so he makes a play right there, but we're not talking about a guy who's just going to dink and dunk his way down the field. My man's got a little gambler in him now, because like the man says, quote, sometimes you've got to have a little bit of screw it.
Play fake. Gardner drops the throw. Fires deep. Right side. That ball is caught by D.D. Westbrook.
How about the big time throw?
What a throw as well. Magnificent throw to a 28-yard gain.
Big time throw from a guy who's already playing some big time ball. And then there is this. Third and nine.
Shotgun two left, one right for Gardner Minshew. He drops the throw, four-man rush. Fires toward the end zone. Once D.D. Chark in the corner of the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Chark attack. And Jacksonville has extended the lead.
Just dropping it right in there. 13 of 18, 125, two TDs in the first half. And he becomes the first rookie in Jags history to pass for at least 600 yards in his first 3 weeks. And Beowulf Minshew was not the only Minshew trying to keep the entire nation entertained last night. His dad, Flint, was putting on a show of his own. A gun show. Flint Minshew is amazing. I want a Flint cam that just stays locked in on this guy at all times. Give me picture in picture. Let's see this guy living and dying with every single play. Because it is electric. He is electric. That family is electric. And here we go again. Like I'm practically talking myself into loving Thursday night football all over again. I'm thinking about Beowulf and Flint. I'm thinking about Duval. I'm thinking about Saxonville. And I'm thinking about my main man, my guy, Calais Campbell, abusing opposing QBs. And suddenly, I'm feeling it all over again. It's good. It's going to be a good night. And then I remember Tennessee's offense. Then I remember Tennessee's Matador offensive line. Then I remember all the flags. Marcus Mariota completed more than half his passes for more than 300 yards. And if that's not a case of stats being deceiving, I don't know what is. Because that was not an efficient or good-looking offense at all. He was pressured 18 times by a D-line that didn't get any pressure on anybody for 2 weeks. Pressured 18 times, sacked 9, and the offense had one penalty after another. They were such a mess that on one play, my man got sacked by his own teammate.
Mariota steps up. Mariota tripped. The sacks keep piling up. He tripped on Jack Conklin, his right tackle, and Jacksonville will get credit for yet another sack. That is 8 on the night for the Jaguars D.
Credit Westwood 1. I mean, there are offenses that don't fire, and then there's that. But they weren't done. They had a 10-play drive that covered 22 yards and ended in a punt. I didn't even know that was possible. But then they did it again. An 11-play drive that covered 28 yards and ended in a punt. Just to prove that that one horrible drive was not a fluke. It was so bad that at one point, Titans backup Ryan Tannehill reached for his helmet. Because that's what that game needed. Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill throwing on his helmet to potentially enter the game and hit a struggling offense with the paddles might be the most Thursday night thing ever. What the hell happened to the Titans last night? Like, I'm old enough to remember when they beat Cleveland in Cleveland by 30. That was the season opener. That was 12 days ago. And there they were last night, literally tripping all over themselves on Thursday night football. That's what TNF does to you. It's like a vortex where good teams and good players seem to forget how to play football. Where good teams and good players look like they've never played football. Where good coaches look like they've never even seen the game. That's Thursday night. It doesn't matter who you put out there. It's going to be bad. You can put out the 62 Packers, make them play the 85 Bears. If they're playing on Thursday night, it's going to be raining, there's going to be penalties, it's going to be horrible, and it's going to be unwatchable. And this is no one-off now. This is a pattern which repeats itself week after week after week. And every single week I promise myself, I will never do it again. Every single week I tell myself, always remember, never forget. Yeah, well, this time I'm not going to forget. I'll remember that horrific feeling, that horrific night. You know what it's like? It's like drinking. It's like drinking. You go on a crazy bender. You wake up the next morning. You're hung terribly. You swear you will never, ever drink again. Until a few days later, when you feel great and you forget how horrible it was and you're slamming shots. Happens to us all. Except that's not what this is. I'm not getting chumped. I'm not going back. Ever. For any reason. Punk me once, shame on you. Punk me hundreds of times every Thursday, shame on me. And I'm no sucker. This is a sucker-free zone. And I just got my Thursday nights back, and it feels good. I think, in fact, the only person who might have had a worse Thursday than me was Nick Foles. Because classy Nick Foles had to stand in the rain and watch that horrible game. And as one drunk old bag once told us, watch somebody steal the show and maybe his gig.
They say they have the best draft in the entire NFL. Are you surprised to hear that?
Certainly not. The first year we took it to the limit. And I was in Miami with my new beach house. Well, it was a couple minutes from the beach.
It's been 20 years since then. We haven't been too strong in the last few years.
Oh, we've been strong. We're just playing by the rules. You can't have a newcomer come in and steal a show.
Are you craving some protein after a good workout? You must be, right? Well, don't make a shake. Don't eat a bar. Grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Why Old Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty. It's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business. that takes smoked beef very seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. Who wants dried, tough beef in a bag that tastes like a shoe? Nobody. Old Trapper is the real deal, and it comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned is sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness, teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy. For those of you who like to take things up a notch, next time you want a great protein and energy snack that you can have anytime, anywhere, reach for some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, ask for it by name, because no other jerky company compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Deion Jones is my guest. Deion, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
How y'all doing?
Good, man. I'm great, Deion. Great to have you. So I know you're focused on the Colts. Really good game. I appreciate it, too. Take me back really quickly, if you don't mind, to Philadelphia. You were coming off a tough loss to Minnesota. What was the mood and the mentality among the players before that game this past weekend?
Really just correct our corrections and get back on track. The first game wasn't how we wanted to start. But, you know, things happen, and we can only start, you know, from where we at. And we looked at the game, and, you know, we realized what we had to get better. You know, we try to bring that forward to this Sunday, and we try to keep it going.
All right, so one more thought about that game last Sunday. On defense, you guys got after Carson Wentz. You hit him really hard. I mean, you're part of a very physical, tough defense. I know you're never looking to hurt anybody on the field, but how would you describe the attitude and the approach of the defense?
We try to be, you know, every year we come and talk about the identity that we want as a defense, you know, fast, physical, and, you know, a defense that people have to look, you know, want, that have to look out for us, you know. And it's going to take every week and every day of practice to do that. So we've just been working at it every day and keep trying to get better, keep trying to get closer, and keep trying to put that style of play on the field every week.
Atlanta Falcons linebacker Deion Jones is joining us. So what was your reaction when you saw Julio Jones catch that pass on fourth down and take it the distance?
Oh, man, that's greatness at a great moment. You know, it was a great check by Matt, a great block by Sanu and Jake, and who did the rest with the speed. And I mean, that's just about us being on our details and executing when it's time to finish. So that's what we try to embody as a team, and that's how we rock, and that's how we got to keep going.
We are talking to Deion Jones. Key phrase there, Deion, is that's how we finish, because after that touchdown, you still had some work to do on defense to close that game out. Head coach Dan Quinn said, quote, "I remember talking to Deion, and he said, we've got this, Q. He smiled at me, and I said, all right, I know it. Let's go finish it off," end quote. Mm-hmm. How good did it feel to finish that game off with that defensive stop on fourth down?
We always talk about being closers, being finishers, and I wanted to make sure that Q knew that, you know, that's the mindset that we're having for this drive, and made sure I portrayed that same message, relayed that same message to my guys, and we stood in there. You know, the whole drive didn't go as we planned, but, you know, everything happened the way that we envisioned it. I was getting off the field and coming down with a fourth down stop, and, you know, closing it out the way we wanted to.
Deion Jones, my guest. All right, so that was then. This is now. You had a big win. Another big challenge coming up. You've got the Colts and Jacoby Brissett. As you get ready for that challenge, what kind of thoughts do you have, and how do they look to you?
This whole process has been fun. I've never played the Colts, so trying to figure out, you know, what all they do and the style of ball that they play. And, you know, they're a good team. ACC team, you know, they like to run the ball, got a good back, got big guys up front. You know, wideouts that can get the ball. I mean, just a NFL team that could beat you any week if you allow them. So just a matter of doing what we got to do and being on our details and playing our style of ball to get a win.
You know, watching you, one of the things that you're known for is your ability to shut down underneath receivers and either break up the pass or stop them immediately after catching it. How do you go about doing that? What's the secret to your technique?
I can honestly say it's just my style of play. I don't want to let my brothers down. I want to be there when I'm supposed to be there, and flying around is the least I can do for them.
You know what, though? Saying that and putting it the way you did, it makes me think about last season when you missed time with a foot injury. You want to be there for your brothers, right? So when you go through something like that, how challenging was that? And do you come back and appreciate the game even more when you get that chance to play once again?
Yeah, I really missed the time that I had out there with my boys. you know, being out, and it was hard, but they kept me in it, you know, knowing that, you know, they got it. They just take care of, be there to help and take care of what I have to take care of so I can come back and, you know, play with them. And that's pretty much was the biggest thing. And, man, it ended up working out pretty well and being able to come back and doing what I was able to do. It just felt good and got a way more, got a higher appreciation for the game because, you know, people say it could be gone any day. And just think about it, the Eagles game was gone the first game of the season. So, you know, you got to appreciate the game now.
Deion Jones, my guest, you do. But the thing about coming back is when you come back after you missed 10 games the way you did, the team was 4-7. It would have been easier just to sit out the rest of the year, rest for the season, get ready for the following season. But that's not what you did. You made it a point to get back out there and play again last season. Even though the team was not going to make the playoffs, why was it so important to get back out there?
I can honestly say it was, I built the bond with this defense throughout the whole offseason in camp. And in the league, every season, it's a different team. And with the bond that I have with those guys, I kind of wanted to finish it out because, you know, with the season that we had and all that, you never know if this is going to be the same defense again. So having those reps out there with those guys and, you know, just finishing out a season was big for me.
So you recently signed a 4-year extension, and you did so over the summer, so that means you're going to be with Atlanta for a while longer. After that deal was announced, Tyrann Mathieu tweeted to congratulate you, and he said in part, quote, "Man, I remember playing against you in high school, bro. Watching your growth as we went to the same school. You wanted it so much. Still remember your moms and pops. Good people. So happy for you, man. One love. Forever LSU. Forever New Orleans." What did it mean to get that message and that kind of love from him?
Oh, man. I've been knowing T since high school, like he said, and just always had my nose on the grindstone. I never like took my eyes off focus no matter what happened. And that's just how I'm built. I don't back down. I don't quit. And I guess it's showing. And, it was good to hear that also. And I'm happy about the deal. I'm glad to be in Atlanta for another 4 years. And, like I said, it's going to be great.
Dude, I'll tell you what, you got to win now. I've got nothing to do with any of it, but to see him tweet at you like that, I thought was really cool. So really quickly, as everybody knows,
that's how close we are at LSU. That's the crazy thing.
Right, exactly. I was going to say, there's some serious, and not only that, but there's some serious high school talent in Louisiana. What were those days like of playing for Jesuit and going up against other big-time schools in that state?
It's actually pretty fun. You know, just the amount of competition that's in New Orleans and in the Catholic League and all around. And then you start seeing these guys, like playing with these guys in college, and then come to find out, like a lot, some of these guys are also in the league too. So just seeing how all of us are like accomplishing our dreams and still pushing and still, you know, alive in this game is dope. And you know, you still have, you know, a lot of passion in it, and you know, trying to play for people back home. You know, so that's part of what we do it for.
Deion, I see it when you play, and I can hear it in your voice, man. There's a lot of pride and a lot of passion and a lot of heart. Atlanta's 1-1. They're at Indianapolis on Sunday. Another big game. It's a 1 p.m. Eastern game on CBS. Deion Jones, my guest. Deion, great to have you back. I really appreciate that. Have a great weekend. I hope we can do it again soon.
I appreciate it. You have a good one, too.
Hey, you ever wonder where your family comes from? I do. My kids do. We all did. Well, you can find out. In fact, you can discover more about them and learn about your story by combining the Ancestry DNA test with billions of historical family records. It is amazing what you can find out because Ancestry DNA gives you so much more than just the places you're from. Ancestry can actually connect you to the places in the world where your story began. And they can do so by using precise geographic detail and clear-cut historical insights. As an example, you can even trace your ancestors' journeys over time. You can follow how and why your family moved from place to place. And to amplify your results, you can start a free trial on Ancestry and build a tree so your ancestors become more than just a name. Again, they've combined DNA results with over 100 million family trees and billions of records to give you more insight into your genealogy and origins. It is incredible how much information there is in this. Only Ancestry can tell a story like that, with unique features that give a more complete picture about a person, you know, like the events that shaped that person. And it's so easy to get started. Simply go to Ancestry.com/podcast right now and save 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Ancestry.com/podcast, and that will save you 20% off your Ancestry DNA kit. Once again, Ancestry.com/podcast. You are going to love this. It is utterly fascinating. Go to Ancestry.com/podcast. All right, so it's Friday, and normally on Friday, I like to go off the board. Not the entire program, but maybe for a segment or a rant, mix it up. Maybe even give you something that I know you want me to talk about. I'm careful about doing that, but on a Friday, on occasion, I will do that. Today is one of those days. Now, today I do have several choices, way too many choices. Let me start off by telling you what it is I'm not willing to talk about before I get to what I am willing to talk about. Here's what I am not willing to talk about. I am not willing to talk about the two Amish teenagers who were pulled over in a horse buggy in Ohio for riding around and slugging brewskis from a 12-pack. I know you want me to talk about that because you've hit me up on email especially. I'm not going to get into it. I'm not going to get into how they evaded police despite being in a horse-drawn buggy. It's an odd story. I love horses, but in no way do I condone or want to promote drinking and bugging. If there's one thing this show has always been against, and I'm on record, and I've made it clear over the years, and I have long been on record, I am clearly against BUIs. BUIs. Either give the reins to somebody sober or telegraph for a hot air balloon. But never, ever, and I mean ever, buggy under the influence. I'm not making light of that either. The next story that I'm sure that you want me to talk about, that I'm not going to talk about, and I hesitate to even bring up, is the story involving Roseanne Barr, proudly admitting to Daily Mail TV that she recently transferred some of her stomach fat to her backside in an attempt to look like a Kardashian. I know how badly you all want me to read her quote, where she said, quote, "I just basically have a crack in my back." I'm not going there. I'm not saying that. I'm not doing that. Her body, her choice, her back. My show. My choice is not to talk about that. So let's just keep right on moving. Now, what I am willing to talk about is Jaguar quarterback Gardner Minshew and his newfound fame and some of the opportunities that are presenting themselves now because of it. One in particular, a 7-figure endorsement offer. Notice I said offer, not a deal, offer, because Gardner is yet to accept. And he probably won't. And he shouldn't, or maybe he should, when you consider how much money is on the table. Let me lay this out. And before I do, let me remind everybody, this is not a show for kids. Never has been, never will be. I understand a lot of you drive around with kids in the car. Keep that in mind. I'm a dad. I get it. I empathize. I understand. Let me tell you right now, this story features adult content. It may not be suitable for the junior high carpool. Do you understand? Good. I'm not going to mention the company by name because that's their entire point with their offer to Gardner, but an adult entertainment website has written to Minshew asking him to do some work for their webcam department. The pornographic website came across the now viral story that Gardner has a pregame stretching routine where he typically performs in nothing but a jockstrap, sometimes with nothing at all. Part of their offer to Gardner is that he lead a weekly exercise class live on webcam wearing nothing but said jockstrap. The other part of the offer is he becomes a brand ambassador for their new line of... All right, so how do I put this? How do I put what they want him to promote? I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. Penis puppets. They have a brand of penis puppets. So right now that website sells costumes for the male package. It includes a vampire, an elephant, even a watermelon. So if Gardner agrees to the endorsement deal, they will be releasing a Jaguar puppet this Halloween in accordance. If he does not agree to the deal, the website said they would make the same offer to his teammate Nick Foles. Foles has a widely known gloss around the league that makes him equally as relevant to the adult website, and I will leave it at that. First thing, few things here. First, notice I did not give the name of the website. There is a reason for that. Once a year, some adult film company or a strip club will offer an outlandish promotion or an endorsement deal to a pro athlete, pretty much knowing that they won't say yes, just to get attention and run from people in my business. It's a brilliant tactic, which leads to free advertising. I'm wise to it. I understand that racket. I'm not going to play that game. So, whether Minshew accepts or not, people still talk about it, and all of a sudden, you have all this exposure for a website, and it's in a bunch of new places, and they didn't pay a dime for it. You know, unlike Jerry Jones, I'll be honest, I'm going to sell my advertising. I will sell it. I'm not going to give it away. The thing is, the target demo for those websites is pretty similar to the target demo for sports talk radio. So I'm not going to participate. I'm not giving away free advertising. That's not how we do it. But I want to make one point, because that's what this comes down to, right? Money. Gardner Minshew is making $495K this year. He's a sixth-round draft pick. He's on that rookie deal for several years. $500K is pretty good money, right? Really good money. But this adult website is offering to double that for a weekly naked exercise class and some puppet promotion. Like Nick Foles is making $22 million a year to rehab a collarbone right now. Offering that guy another mil to webcam nude is a non-starter. But offering it to a guy who's never seen that kind of money before and who's making $500K and could go from $500K to $1.5 million a year might be something he might think about. Like, I'm sure there's a long-term play here, and he'll say, I'm going to make it back. But it's the NFL. Your next step on the field could be your last. You imagine getting 67% of your income from porn and 33% from the NFL. Again, nothing's guaranteed in that league. NFL, not for long. Your health status can change in a second. Ask Alex Smith, ask Drew Brees, ask Cam Newton, ask Ben Roethlisberger, ask Sam Darnold, ask Trevor Siemian, ask Nick Foles. The difference between those guys and Gardner Minshew is those guys were all multi-millionaires. I would never tell Beowulf what to do, but I'd be lying if I said that the idea of him asking Tom Coughlin for permission to promote puppets wouldn't be amazing. Because it would be. And what if Coughlin told him, yeah, that's fine, but that webcam exercise class, if it starts on time, son, you're late. My man, your moneymaker is not south of the border. It is north of your lip. Go find a mustache wax company and sign with that instead. Nobody wants you to hawk penis puppets. Justin Verlander is my guest. Justin, it is great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Good to be on, man. It's definitely been a little bit, so happy to be back.
No, it's great to have you back, and I appreciate you doing it. See, beat the Rangers 4-1 Tuesday night in a game where you struck out 8 and 6 innings. That was your 19th win of the season. The team's 99th win of the season. It brings you even closer to 3,000 career strikeouts. Afterwards, you said, quote, I think there's two ways to think about it. Either we came in and expected to win, or you appreciate the moment. I mean, I know you've got a lot of work to do, but how much are you appreciating this moment?
I mean, I definitely am appreciating it. You know, I think when I was hurt there for a couple of years, 2014 really, and early 2015, I think it helped put some things in perspective for me. It kind of was along the lines of ignorance is bliss the first, 10 years of my career. It just kind of, I was just healthy, and I mean, I did work hard, but it just kind of came easy to me. And then kind of like the whole world came crumbling down and had to rethink the whole process, and a lot of hard work went on behind the scenes. So I think, that kind of low point in my career has given me the perspective to really appreciate what I'm able to do right now.
You know, it's amazing what you're doing right now, given where you were back then. You talked about the process. Justin, what was that process like? What was your mindset? What was the process? How were you able to grind through that and get back to where you are right now?
Yeah, just the competitiveness, the will and the urge to get back. Honestly, when I got hurt, I ended up having core surgery, and it was, a surprise, but at the same time, it was a little bit of a relief because I didn't know why all of a sudden my arm had started hurting and I didn't really have any answers. And then all of a sudden, at least that was an answer. You know, obviously surgery is never really the answer you want to hear, but it was an answer. So once I had that, it just kind of was like a horse with blinders on running race. You know, it was just like, let me get to the finish line. Let me do everything I can possibly do to get myself back to being healthy and pitching the way I used to. And, you know, it started with, I mean, things as little as like learning how to walk like I used to again, you know, like use my feet properly. I mean, from the ground up all the way to my neck, you know, is just kind of like a putting Humpty Dumpty back together again, you know, and slowly but surely I started noticing it in my mechanics, and my pain in my shoulder started to go away and the velocity started to come back. So, I mean, I'm kind of like concising it a lot here, but I mean, it was a lot going on behind the scenes, but I'm thankful I was able to put in all that work and really it kind of, I think, shaped my career moving forward. I learned a lot through that process about my body and how to keep myself maintenanced. And I think that's what's going to continue to allow me to be successful, hopefully, as long as I would like to be.
Justin Verlander is joining us. Yeah, I mean, I understand how you had to condense that answer, but there's a lot in that answer, but in no way would that do justice. The kind of work you had to put in to get back to where you are. I mean, on the one hand, and it's just kind of my take, Justin, when you have the career you've had, an amazing career that you've had, you don't need to put in all that work to get back. But even if you put in all that work to get back, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to get back to what you were or maybe even better than that. Mm-hmm. So how satisfying is it to be the pitcher that you wanted to be and that it has paid off?
Very. You know, definitely a good feeling. I mean, like I said, I think I don't know if I would appreciate these moments as much had I not gone through that downturn. I remember in spring training in 15, like I remember the moment that I was like, oh, my God, I'm back. It was the last start in spring training against the Toronto Blue Jays. And all of a sudden, like my body started feeling normal on the mound again. And I'm looking up the radar gun and it was without effort and without pain, 95, 96. And I'm like, oh, my God, that's it. I'm back. And unfortunately, I ended up straining my lat, like literally the next inning. So I missed 6 or 7 weeks at the beginning of the season. But in the back of my mind throughout that time, I kind of was like, I got it. Like I've been throwing so different for the last 2 years that now I got back to throwing like me again. And something hurt that dissuaded me from the mission. And And sure enough, when I got back, I pitched the end of 2015 pretty good. Just nobody noticed because the Tigers at that time, who I was with, we were out of the playoff picture and nothing much was happening. But kind of in my bubble, in my personal bubble, I was like, okay, this feels normal again. And, you know, next thing you know, 2016 was a great year. And people were like, well, where'd that come from? And, well, this is where it did, yeah.
Astros pitcher Justin Verlander. Hey, where did that come from? You just showed up and look at you. Amazing.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So you joined the Astros. You've gone 40-15 with an ERA of 2.41. You lead all American League pitchers in just about every category that matters over that stretch. What kind of expectations did you have when you joined the Astros, and what has the experience been like for you?
It's been great. You know, I think one of the things I was looking forward to was the information that I could use. I had started doing diving into numbers and analytics with Detroit. But obviously the Astros had been pretty widely known to be the most analytic forward organization in baseball. So they had a head start on the Tigers. So that was one of the things that I kind of came in with a mission to do was study as much as I could, learn as much as I could. And this is also a product of when I wasn't healthy because I had to learn many different ways to try to get hitters out. I used to just be able to throw it, you know, 100 when I wanted to and, you know, break off a breaking ball. And, you know, it worked most of the time. But all of a sudden, when you're not healthy, you realize how hard this game is. So I had a conversation with our then manager, Brad Ausmus, one day, and he was talking to me about my pitch selection. And basically, that conversation led down a path of you should look at some numbers a little bit more instead of kind of the old school, just look at video and just go, you know, just throw your hat out there. And so that kind of started it for me. And, you know, when I got to Houston, that was kind of the first thing I did was go in and talk to these guys. And I joked with them saying, I might be the first athlete you've ever had come in and ask for more information because they give you a lot. But I thought it was, you know, an opportunity for me to learn and grow some more.
I'm sure they said, we'll give you as much as you want. We can give you all the information you need. Justin Verlander joining us. You mentioned Brad Ausmus, who I've always had a great deal of respect for. Justin, this is also a huge AJ Hinch house. I've got so much respect for him. I know how much he respects you. What's he been like to play for?
He's been incredible. I think he does an incredible job at being a leader, but also communicating. And I know that seems easy, but I think it's one of the hardest things as a manager to do, is to kind of have your players be at ease and know you're the manager, but also be able to communicate in a friendly atmosphere. And I think he does an incredible job running the team. I think he does a great job blending the feel of the game. I mean, obviously he was a catcher in the major leagues, so he has a great feel, and also blending the analytics. And I think that's what a team that is analytically driven needs. I think they need somebody who can use their feel of the game and just trust their instincts out there. I think that's what's one of the things that's led me to have success, is I'm not all in. I'm not going to cookie cut the way I pitch out there based on numbers. I'm going to trust my instincts, but I'm going to try to blend them with information.
Justin Verlander joins me for another moment or so. Listen, I'm on the outside looking in, but from where I'm sitting, it's a fascinating clubhouse. There's that legendary story now about you seeing Alex Bregman in the clubhouse last year and asking him how much he slept every night. When he said 6 hours, you told him, come on, man, you need more. You need 10. He thought that was way too much, but then he commits to it and he starts to crush the ball. When did you first discover the power of sleep and how valuable it is to you?
To be honest, man, it's just kind of I've been pretty fortunate my whole career. I just kind of listen to my body and whatever makes me feel good. And if I was going to sleep, our schedule is pretty crazy. You get done with a baseball game, you get home at 11:30, and you're still pretty wired. So I was finding myself going to sleep at, 2 o'clock, 2:30, and I just wouldn't set an alarm. And next thing you know, I'm waking up at noon, 12:30, and it's like, okay, well, I just slept for 10 hours, but man, I feel great. My body feels great. So that kind of started it. And then I started doing some research, because it's like, am I sleeping too much? Is this like too late to wake up? And the more research I did, the more I started to find that some other elite athletes in the world have really focused on sleep. And that's kind of when I decided to really take it and focus on something as my recovery, because I think unless unless you're one of those athletes that chooses to go another route, I think sleep is one of the most important things you can do to recover, and it's one of the only things you can do to really recover naturally. So that was kind of the beginning of it for me, and I've been talking to guys ever since. Some of the young guys like Bregman, we were having breakfast, and I overheard him saying how little sleep he got, and I kind of asked him why. And he's like, well, I just always heard that this is what you're supposed to get. And I that kind of spurred the conversation. I'm like, well, Alex, that's what you're supposed to get if you're a regular person who, doesn't put their body through as much stress as you. So you need to probably rethink that a little bit. And I showed him some information and, got to get hats off to Breggy. He was willing to try it. And sure enough, it coincided with him going off a little bit. So I don't want to take credit for him going off, but I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, he's done all right. I mean, that's advice that that's information he took, Justin, and he ran with it really quickly. I really appreciate your time, but I got to get your thoughts on him. You've been around every kind of guy, every kind of player, every kind of mentality, every kind of approach. I am so fascinated by Bregman, like where he started, how he came up, his belief in himself, what he brings to it in terms of skill set. In terms of being a pros pro, a baseball player, a guy who gets after it, what kind of marks do you give him?
Man, a 10 out of 10. It's just incredible to see his work ethic. He gets to the park every day. He's one of the first ones there. And it's not just like just be there, just to be there. He's there studying. He's there trying to get every single possible advantage he can, studying himself, studying the other team, studying the pitchers. And he makes everybody around him better. And I think that's the ultimate compliment for a teammate, is when they don't just make themselves better, they make the team better.
He is a World Series champion, an American League MVP, a Cy Young Award winner, a Triple Crown winner. He did throw his third no-hitter. I can go on and on. The Astros are in first in the West. They clinched a postseason spot. Justin, that's why I was looking forward to that. It's been a long time. It is so good to hear your voice and have you back on this show, and I can't say how much I appreciate that. That was tremendous.
Thanks for having me on, Jim. Always a pleasure.
Sign up and be an O Rewards member today and earn 1 point for every $1 spent. Receive your rewards twice as fast and on the go when you provide your email address as well. O Rewards members get $5 back for every $150 they spend. It's fast, it's easy, it's free. It's only at O'Reilly Auto Parts. See store or orewards.com for details. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day.
Join us right now with his early season take on the league is the one and only Jim Rome, host of the Jim Rome Show. Take it away, Jim!
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you, except I know for a fact that a number of you are not having a tremendous Monday, because I know a number of you go as your local team goes, and some really bad things happened to some of your teams yesterday. Steelers fans, I've got bad, bad news for you. Saints fans, I've got bad news for you.
Yeah! Here's Mason Rudolph warming up. Ben Roethlisberger's elbow.
Ben Roethlisberger. Out for the season. 0-2. Big Ben's done the entire year. I don't want to say the Steelers season is over, but the Steelers season is over.
The thumb agrees, and he's out.
This felt like it was something a bit more significant.
A torn ligament in the thumb on his throwing hand. So that also sucks. I would love to tell you that everything's going to be just fine, but I'm not sure that it will. Trevor Price.
If you're going to be Big Ben, can't do it at 172 pounds.
What?
6 weeks is not it, man. That's going to be 12. That might be season ending.
Dr. Price, did you just double the amount of time?
Double it.
Email.
The weekend's football action. I missed it all because I was dead. Signed Ed Money. I know, clones. The second ticket was for Rick Ocasek.
Holy goodness smoke!
The Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes and the Raiders don't. He's got the arm of John Elway, the release of Dan Marino, and the savviness of Brett Favre.
And Aaron Jones blowing up more Vikings than the Anglo-Saxons in the 9th century. All right. And you know,
Lonnie Sitake is my guest. How do you go about leading through love?
I'm a product of other people's love. And so it'd be foolish for me not to return that to others, you know.
Odell, who?
Here's Mayfield throwing, and it's Odell Beckham Jr. in the clear. He's going into the end zone. 10,
Cleveland 23,
touchdown.
Jets 3, Haters 0.
That's your opinion?
I told you so. They did what they needed to do. 1-0 on the week. Tip your hat and keep moving.
God bless the Cleveland Brown fans all over the world.
Running back Aaron Jones, what was the hardest candy or dessert to give up?
Hardest candy was gummy bears. To give up. That was definitely my snack to go to and chip.
Were you more of a sugar guy or a salt guy?
Sure, definitely.
Bench the salt.
My 32-year-old body is...
Hawk, you're 32.
Yep.
Jesus.
The guy sitting behind you who's 44 going on 70 can't believe you're 32.
32!
Levante David.
It was just about me just having the right mindset to attack it, attack the process. That's what I did. Every day, getting in, I'm trying to beat the training shit. I'm trying to get as much work in as I can.
That's your opinion?
Twitter!
You think Greg Williams sound bite is surprising? Baby, you ain't seen nothing yet. Signed Bachman Turner Overdrive.
I don't really want it to be a distraction.
And I guarantee Coughlin's sitting back there thinking to himself, we're not going to let Jalen Ramsey dictate the situation. Maybe you should, Tom. If you have to pick between your star corner and your average head coach, you better take the star corner.
Some hella love.
But now I'm working a construction job. It doesn't matter. I got to go to work every day and feed my kids wrong.
If I did what Jalen Ramsey did in my job, I wouldn't have a job. Right. Because you are replaceable. Because I am replaceable.
I can tell you no more than what Marty told you.
To undergo X-ray, MRI.
I don't know.
The head coach doesn't know anything about whether or not the former MVP underwent or needs to undergo an MRI.
I have no idea.
La la, I don't want to know about Cam.
Emailed.
There have been some really bad resets on this program, starting notably with Oge. But the oldest and one of the worst has to be Bo Diaz. I have no idea how that became a thing.
Back to throw. Fade right side. Witten.
He's not lucky he's the Cowboys quarterback. The Cowboys are lucky Dak Prescott is their QB1. Pay him. No one needs to put two donuts and a piece of fried chicken in their face for lunch. That is not your breakfast, lunch, and dinner writ. If you're thinking about eating this Sando, don't. Terry Francona is my guest.
Damn, Jim, can you say that again? That's kind of felt good.
My man, I could say that all day long. Terry, you know that? You know that? I got
it's
such
good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm not just talking to Jim Rome. I'm talking to the Hall of Famer Jim Rome.
My man.
You know, some people get mad about being in doctor's offices. I say, you got to have patience.
Hell! Why don't you give him a golden ticket for that?
Steal a show.
Say, if AB's looking for somewhere to crash, he can crash with me. Imagine the tabloids then.
Jim, you're literally my bestest friend.
Hey, John, my apologies. I'm really sorry that had to happen. Jeff in Southfield, come on, man.
And I was laughing
so hard that people were actually knocking on my window and asking me what I was laughing about.
Don't come up in here and lie to me, Steve.
I'm supposed to be in the batter's box today on the phone.
Deion Jones.
I don't want to let my brothers down. I want to be there when I'm supposed to be there, flying around, the least I can do for them.
Justin Verlander is my guest.
Good to be on, man. It's definitely been a little bit, so happy to be back.
Justin, what was that process like?
From the ground up, all the way to my neck, kind of like putting Humpty Dumpty back together again, you know, and...
Tennis puppets.
You see this guy, sausage fingers?
Mike Bettini.
My heart jumped up in my throat.
Foot locker, I mean, referee.
Who has it?
Next question.
I'm on fire.
Dude, you should be fired. Put his babies in
Please,
me.
Please, Jim, come to Houston and see a game with me.
Are you not a Hall of Famer going into the Radio Hall of Fame in November?
I love that.
Thank you. Good night now.
Alvin, that was incredible. So, say you're walking down the street, and then for whatever reason, incredibly enough, there's a $100 bill right there on the street. Are you going to pick it up and put it in your pocket, or are you going to walk right over it? Of course you're going to put it in your pocket. So why do you keep picking winners but not bet on them? This is why you need to go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And I would not be telling you where to go if I didn't feel that strongly about MyBookie. I wouldn't tell you that if they weren't the best. So do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, then bet with MyBookie. Did you know, for instance, that you could bet on games after they start? If by the second half it looks like your bet's not going to come through, you can always flip and take the other side. Or if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little bit and win a lot, try a parlay. You know how that works? If all your picks come in, you multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join right now. MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code ROME to activate that offer. It's an amazing offer, actually. Promo code ROME activates the offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Matt Olson is my guest. Matt, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good, Jim. How you doing?
Good. Good, Matt. Great to have you. So you've won 8 of 9. You've won 13 of 16. Matt, you've got one-run wins against the Royals, including a 1-0 win in 11 on Wednesday. So bring me up to date. How would you describe the vibe in your clubhouse right now?
Yeah, it's a good vibe. You know, obviously we are in a spot that we wanted to be in at the beginning of the year where we have a chance at a postseason run. And you know, while it's not the division, I feel like we're in a good spot for the wild card, and yeah, everything's good.
Hey, Matt, yesterday I had Terry Francona on the show, and he said that as long as he's been around baseball, extra inning games in September are still kind of a kick in the ass. Like, there's still so much juice in that. How about you? What was that Wednesday game like for you, and how good did it feel to win that game that way?
Yeah, it's a big win, especially coming down in the stretch. You know, you get to September and there's more arms to play longer games. So when you get into the extra innings, it's a little bit of a grind. And to be able to kind of mentally stay in it and for us to grind out a win is a big, especially when we got this race coming down.
Matt Olson joining us. Let me go back to Tuesday night, Matt, against the Royals for a moment. The team's bats have been a little bit quiet through the first six innings, and then you unloaded on a 2-1 pitch. Before we get to the details of the home run itself, what were you looking for on that pitch, and then how did it feel when it left your bat?
That one felt pretty good. He was working his heater well that night, had a lot of life on it, and that bat before he threw a sinker in, froze me for a strikeout. You know, I just wanted to be aware of that and got to a 2-1 count and, you know, wanted to get on his fastball. I'd been playing up all night and I didn't want to be beat by it.
That didn't happen because the ball left the bat at 110 miles per hour. It went over the first row of suites in the Coliseum in dead center, and you did it on a night in cool temperatures where the ball is not supposed to travel. I mean, you've hit some monster home runs in your career, including one in Philly a little while back. So where does this one rank?
It's either one or two. I'm not sure whether this one or the one in Philly was better. The Statcast said the one in Philly was further, but I don't know. I'm not so sure that that's right. So I'll pick this last one over the one in Philly.
Good. I see it working. Matt Olson joining us. Now, earlier in the month, you said, quote, "I just feel like I'm becoming more aware of my swing. When something feels off, I feel like I'm addressing it sooner than I have in the past and kind of getting back on track." Can you lay that out for me? What does it feel like to become more aware of your swing? I mean, I don't want to get too, like, esoteric about it, but what's it feel like to become more aware of it, and how important is it just to have that awareness?
Yeah, I think it's really important. You know, I've never been too high of an average guy, but I could also argue that I've never had the same approach that I have at the plate right now. You know, I think it's just something that comes along with the at-bats, comes along with the experience. You're starting to face, you know, more guys in the big leagues that you faced before. You get more of a book on them. You know, it's just a big combination of things. I feel like I've gotten to the point that I'm at now. And, you know, really, I changed my swing to a new one in 2017, and 2017 went well for me the whole year. And last year was kind of a grind, so... From those two things, I've kind of picked and choose certain things and know what clicks for me now.
A's first baseman Matt Olson joining us. So you lead the American League first baseman in home runs, but I say that because you do it despite missing 30 games in March and April due to a broken bone. How were you able to get up to speed so quickly after an injury of that magnitude?
You know, I'm really not sure. I'd heard, obviously, that the hamate bone, you know, there's a big thing around baseball that it affects power. But honestly, once I started the rehab process and once I fully got back to swinging, I didn't really feel that the ball was coming off my bat any different. I don't know if it's a thing where I like being loose with my hands at the plate or whatever it may be, or me taking it slow through the rehab process, but through that, I feel like we handled it the right way, and I was able to kind of hit the ground running as far as that sense.
Matt Olson joining us. Listen, the word culture, Matt, gets used quite a bit in sports. In fact, I can't do an interview without it coming up one way or another. But there's a quote from your teammate, Chris Bassett, and he said, quote, "Matt Chapman and Matt Olson came and changed the culture around here." You can easily go back and say, hey, when did this all change? All these young guys changed the culture here, end quote. Look, I'm not sure I've ever heard a higher praise for a younger player than that. What's it mean to you then, Matt, to hear that? And did you consciously go about changing the culture or trying to change it?
Yeah, it's definitely an honor to hear that from a teammate. But no, I think it's just, you know, it's all that Chapman and I have kind of known in a way. You know, before we came up, you know, the way that the team was structured was kind of a little more of guys coming in on rental deals and, you know, the A's kind of piecing together a team, trying to make the money work. And, you know, I think from that shift to the younger core kind of coming up and almost feeling like a little bit of a breath of fresh air, you know, we were able to kind of hit the ground running with that and, you know, in a way, try to change that culture into a winning culture. And, you know, we've had a couple of good years here and want to keep it going for a while.
So when I think about you guys and part of the dynamic that you and Chapman bring to it is your partners when it comes to playing cards. Legend has it, the two of you are the best partnership in that clubhouse, even better maybe than Marcus Semien and Chad Pinder. Is it true? Can anybody hang with you guys at the card table?
Oh, I love that. We're up there in our own minds. We definitely have the most fun with it, I think. Semien and Fires have beat us a couple flights here lately, but we're trying to turn it around.
So how did you get into it? Were you always into cards, and what do you guys play?
We play Pluck, which is pretty much spades where you can pick your own trump suit, and yeah, I've always kind of been a cards guy. You learn to be a cards guy in the minor leagues when you're bussing around all over the middle of nowhere and, you know, just sitting through rain delays, whatever it may be. So it's kind of stuck. It makes the flights go a little quicker and get to chirp some guys during it.
Okay, so how much chirping is going on during those games?
Oh, there's a lot of chirping. There's a lot of stuff that couldn't be said on here, but You know, it's all in good fun, and we're just trying to find a way to kill some time.
Well, I don't want to get greedy. Maybe you do the podcast, and then you can say whatever you want. Now, Chapman said you guys don't cheat, and he says you guys don't cheat because you won't cheat. Does that mean that he will cheat and that you guys would cheat if you were willing to cheat?
I don't think he would either. I think he wants to beat people straight up, which is kind of where I'm at, but... No, I don't want to get into that. We're trying to figure out if other people are cheating on us to bring us down. But for us, we're gonna ride it out and just try to beat them fair and square.
I mean, I respect your honesty and I respect your integrity. But you know, baseball, like if you're not cheating, you're not trying. It's only cheating if you get caught. Or even in baseball, like there are certain ways to cheat. Just don't rub it in anybody's face. Are cards like that? I mean, is it like sign stealing? You can do it, but a certain way. Can you cheat in cards a certain way, or can you just not cheat? You can tell I like this topic.
Yeah, no, I don't know. We're trying to pick up on some verbal cues from people, see if there's, you know, similarities and Marcus Semien trying to tell Fires what suit to call. But we're cracking down on it. I'll let you know if we find any hard evidence.
Good. Thanks for doing that. And then one final thought, Matt. You know, guys, like some guys can pick signs. Like some guys just have a knack, right? You can sit in the bench or in the dugout, and some guys are really good at it and can decipher the code really quickly. Is it the same way with cards and tells and things like that? Do you just have to have a knack for it?
Yeah, for sure. It is kind of crazy, the similarities between stuff like that. But yeah, I guess, you know, all our days of looking for little things that pitchers do and whatever it may be on the baseball field is paying off on the card table. So guys will do some certain things where you know what they're about to do.
Mark in Hollywood. Yo, brother, what's up?
Jim, what up, Play? I'm doing good. First off, I want to say belated congrats to Jake on becoming a fellow Big Tenner. Even though he's attending what we call the man boob of the conference. But, yo, I'm super bummed that you're not going to be attending Saturday's game against Michigan just because you're depriving a national audience of the inevitable spectacle when Harbaugh sees you in the stands, pulls his khakis up to his belly button, and rushes in like Ron Artest to throw hands with you while you're just peacefully trying to eat your KFC donut chicken sandwich, which is known in Madison as finger food on Wisconsin. But, no, seriously, I'd like to congratulate Garner Minshew on surviving the typical first 24 hours of instant fame. I mean, Jim, you know the drill when someone becomes an overnight sensation. Step one, gushing Twitter love. Step two, complimentary memes. Step three, digging up old tweets of rap lyrics that contain the N-word. And step four, my personal favorite, the resurfacing pictures of Halloween costumes where the newly famous person is wearing blackface. It's like clockwork. And my man Gardner shrugged off that sack like my man Beaks shrugs off his blood sugar level, and Brady in the hoodie shrug off any responsibility for their derelict, degenerate, criminally empowered teammates. You know, Jim, there's something you have to admire about Lord Sidious not giving an F about the league rules. We all know he colluded with Rosenhaus to snatch up Mr. No Means Yes as soon as he slithered his flatulent ass out of Oakland. That's why the hoodie ordered that adultering, cheating, fake chin Ken doll Brady to pull an A-Rod and say, if AB's looking for somewhere to crash, he can crash with me. Imagine the tabloids then. And as you said, Jim, they knew all about his legal issues before he got there. They just don't give a bleep. These are the same bags that spied on teams, that deflated balls, that harbored a killer who they told to get a stash house. They make out with their kids in public. Their owner uses slaves as a napkin. This is why it's so tasty that Brown sent those threatening texts yesterday, because now it's going to be taken out of their corrupt hands, and the NFL is going to sit this guy until formal charges are brought against him. And when AB's thrown into the same cell as Hernandez was in, which is now known in the prison as the Patriot Wing, let's just hope someone plays target practice with his back for a change. War the Patriot way. Oh, are we just not going to talk about IRA doing coke on Twitter? Late.
We go now to New York. John, in New York. How you doing, John?
Thank you, Jim, for taking my call. Jim, that interview that you did the other month with heavyweight champ Del Monte Wilder. That was like the best interview that I ever heard in my whole life, Jim. Jim, your interviews are the most awesome interviews in the history of radio, Jim. Jim, you're literally my bestest friend in the whole wide world, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
That's not a good call. No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Hey, Alvin.
Not a very good call.
You'll run that guy, but you'll let Mark in Hollywood just do whatever he wants for as long as he wants. John in New York. The real blue check verified John in New York. Calls right now. My man John, how are you?
Jim, I'm doing great. It's great to be on with you again. Hey, I had to call the fire department, the New York Fire Department, on Sunday after seeing you on the NFL today. Awesome spot, Jim. Crushed it. On point, on market. Everything was like I was like pumping my chest out when I saw that. And I was telling my friends about that. You know, people who think you're all about Hollywood and everything. I was like, how can you not like that guy? And if you like that guy on TV, if you hear him on the radio, you'll love him. You'll love him after you hear him. And Jim, as far as our Port Authority tunnel resident, Happy Days freak, and Roswell escapee from Southfield, if he'd have brought that act to the Apollo, the Sandman would have came out and cracked him in the gums. Because from the sounds of it, I'm pretty sure his teeth are already missing, Jim. Thanks again, Hall of Famer, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
You know it, John. Rack him. You tell me, does that guy sound even remotely like this guy?
That was like the best interview that I ever heard.
Nice try, Jeff.
In my whole life, Jim.
Nothing.
Jim, your interviews.
He sounds nothing like him.
Awesome interviews in the history of radio, Jim.
He sounds nothing like John. Nothing like John. Come on, Jeff.
Good night.